So we're still lingering in the 13th step of mindfulness of breathing, that of observing inconstancy. And that there's something about inconstancy and observing it that leads to the 14th step, which is usually translated into English as dispassion. When we'll get to the meanings of it, maybe tomorrow, but or soon. But there's something about seeing impermanence that is onward leading, seeing inconstancy, which opens something up that allows something to unfold and deepen or move along. And a very common term in the Buddhist scriptures is the idea of the Dharma is onward leading. And it's onward leading to greater and greater freedom. And one of the things that's very much so a part of this onward leading nature is this settling back, resting in awareness, in a sense, and becoming more and more aware of the transiency of experience, the inconstancy of experience. Sometimes it's called impermanence, but as I've said, that's going to imply, for some people, only means that sooner or later something will no longer exist, it'll die or be gone forever. And while there's wisdom to that understanding, for sure, and it can be freeing in itself in a certain way, the core insight of the Buddha has more to do with the momentary inconstancy of things, that everything is kind of part of, like, it's, he didn't say this, but it's like the inconstant waves or ripples on a river that flows by, and the little wavelets come and they go, they exist and don't exist, and they're inconstant, they're constantly being reborn, constantly passing away. And so many of our sensations are coming and going, coming and going. Sometimes they stay longer than we wish, but sooner or later they pass and they maybe come back again. But to really settle in and really start seeing more and more precisely or intimately, closely, how much of our experience is a flowing experience, is a changing sensation, things are appearing and disappearing, sometimes in rapid succession, or sometimes it can just feel like everything is just flowing sand. And the reason for flowing sand rather than water, as some people say, is that sand is a little bit more like particular. So it's a little bit more the particular sensations that have some kind of clarity to them, whereas water flows, but there's no sense of a particularity to each molecule of water. Whereas sand, there's a particularity. Or some people, it feels like snow, just everything is just like snow, you know, or raindrops, but flowing sand. And everything, and just really settling back and getting very still, and then appreciating how everything is arising and passing. This was a very significant insight for the Buddha. It was like his, in the way it's described in some texts, is like this was his big aha moment. This is what he, in seeing this, he realized this is the path to liberation. With seeing this arising and passing, the inconstancy, there was light, there was wisdom, there was clarity, there was the path opened for the Buddha. But in particular, what was particular, both seeing arising was very important for him, but seeing the passing was very important as well. And it seems like the passing and the ceasing of things was even more important than seeing their arising. I'm not sure, but one reason is that when we know that things pass, even if they're inconstant, they come back, we know that they're not permanent. We know that it's not always that way. And that frees us from the mind that it's that kind of unconsciously or subconsciously we relate to things as if they're always going to be there, and as opposed to relating to them as being, oh, this is just part of the flavor of the moment. This is what's coming here now, and in due time it'll pass. And in fact, if I pay really careful attention to the particularity of the moment, it's already passing and then arising, passing and arising. And so knowing that it's not constant, so that's very helpful with things like suffering. If we think that suffering is durable, stuck, solid, unchanging, then it's very hard to get in there. It's like concrete. It's very hard to get in there and try to do anything with it. But we see it as more as flowing sand or flowing water. You try to reach into water and hold on to it, grab a fistful of it, it just disappears through your fingers very quickly. And so we realize suffering doesn't have that solidity we thought before. Self, all the things we think of as myself, or we identify strongly as being, this is who I am, to really see that it also has a certain way of inconstancy, that it comes and goes, the sensations, the experience, the thing, the role, the ideas, the feelings, the intuitions, the whatever it might be that we think is it, this is myself, we start seeing that too as part of this flow and current of a river, and we can't quite hold on to it. And so there's these gaps in the arising and passing. There's this moments of freedom. And the passing begins to teach us not to cling, not to grasp. And we start seeing it's simply not worth grasping. And this is a powerful insight that comes many, many times in life, all kinds of ways. But in deeper and deeper meditation, there's a sense of well-being, of freedom and openness, a lack of clinging that's so palpable that we begin feeling that any movement to contract, any movement to resist, any movement to hold on tight, or to linger and be involved with something that's going on, is a loss of some of the peace. We're actually better off in the freedom. We're better off in this deep, settled, quiet peacefulness. And in that, we can learn it's not worth clinging. We lose something in the contracting. We lose something in the resisting. And it isn't that we are told, you know, it's a good Buddhist, you should let go of clinging. It's more like, there's no admonition like that. It's more like, pay careful attention, become quiet. And when you notice for yourself that you're worse off clinging, then don't cling. And one of the lessons for this that helps this is when we realize in certain deep states of meditation that clinging doesn't work at all, because whatever it is we're clinging to is also constantly passing away. And whether you don't have to be in that constant passing away place in meditation to begin appreciating how much does pass away and how in the passing away it is possible to tune into a kind of peacefulness, a freedom, a spaciousness, an openness that kind of allows or makes room for, or permits, if we don't cling to the next thing that comes up. Kind of allow it to pass, and in the space that it leaves behind, in a sense, just be open there, be relaxed there. Take that in. The next thing something else will arise. But rather than being, you know, preoccupied by it or caught by it or analyzing it or reflecting on or doing things with it, allow the next thing to arise in that space, in that openness, in that field of awareness that just lets it comes and goes. And in the process of doing that, we learn more and more about letting go. We learn more and more about not holding on to anything. I need to charge my battery. And so, because batteries also pass away, and it's probably good for the next couple of minutes to keep it going. So And so this teaching on not self, that is often perplexing for people, is a teaching that makes more and more sense when we understand that nothing qualifies as an enduring self. There's nothing that we can find inside of ourselves or in direct experience, then we're really intimate and close to direct experience. Nothing that qualifies as, oh, that's myself, because it passes as well. And the idea being that anything that passes cannot be an enduring self. And any theory, for the Buddha's point of view, any doctrine of self, any theory about what the self is, lends itself to a kind of reification, a kind of solidification on what is self that's not possible when things are constantly changing. It's kind of like there's no place to hang your hat. There's no place to tack, with thumbtack, no place to tack any philosophy, idea, concept, theory about what the self is. It's like taking a thumbtack and trying to stick it into a river and having it, stuck. It doesn't stick anywhere. So any theory about self just doesn't quite stick, doesn't quite work when this constantly flowing, inconstant nature of experience that begins to open up in deep vipassana practice. The core, deepest, kind of important insight of insight meditation is this inconstancy of phenomena, the changing nature, the current of phenomena as it flows through and arises and passes here in the present moment. So to settle back and observe that, and this 13th step is what's talked about, and as we do that, we begin feeling that the things that we cling to, have passionate lust for, passionate hatred for, that all that kind of the ways in which we're driven or about things, passionate around our attachments, just doesn't make any sense as well. And it stops losing its allure. It stops losing its enchantment. We stop falling under its spell. And then we begin observing that we're less and less interested in clinging, less and less interested in lust and hatred and, this driven, attached kind of passion that can happen, like the passion for money or the passion for power or kind of the negative understandings of passion. And so then the 14th step is observing dispassion. So then we'll end, and this will pass as well, and we'll make room for the next thing to happen, and chances are that it's simply inconstant, and we'll meet again here tomorrow at the same time. Thank you.